Tracy from Last Stop This Song, and you're listening to CJLO 6090 AM in Montreal.
Pride events in Montreal continue to split over the topic of Palestine. On July 30th, Fierté Montréal, the organization which runs the official Pride parade in the city, issued a statement condemning, quote, genocide in Gaza, unquote. In tandem with their statement, Fierté also banned two groups from participating in the parade for, quote, hateful discourse, unquote. The groups were Ga'ava, a Jewish LGBTQ plus organization in the city, and the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, the CIJA. Both groups have expressed views sympathetic with the Israeli Defense Force. The banning of these groups drew controversy. Five Liberal MPs, including Montréal's Anthony Housefather, penned an open letter to Fierté Montréal, calling on them to reverse the ban. Less than a week later, the ban was reversed. The two groups were invited back into the Pride parade. The chair of Fierté Montréal's board of directors also resigned ahead of this announcement, citing personal reasons. Fierté released a statement reading, although this was not Fierté Montréal's intention, the announcement was perceived by the Jewish community in Quebec as a way to exclude them from its events, unquote. The president of one of these banned and promptly reinvited groups, Ga'ava, Carlos A. Godoy, who describes himself as an ally to the Jewish community, provided a public statement about the barring and reinstating of his organization at Pride.
Either we are inclusive or we are not. In Montreal, Pride has always been an inclusive space for every LGBTQ plus member of the community to be their authentic self, and we cannot ask Jews to not be their authentic selves in the Pride Parade.
But more LGBTQ plus Montrealers have been leaving mainstream Pride events over this neutrality. This summer, the organization Wild Pride emerged as an alternative to Fierté, with its own parade and events being more explicitly political. Another group, Rad Pride, has also been organizing its own events. To comment on this split in the community is Austin Clayman, a vocal Jewish LGBTQ plus activist in Montreal who wants to see Pride circles condemn genocide in Gaza. They say they won't be participating in Fierté's parade this year.
As a Jewish queer person, I think it's important for queer organizations to take stances on issues like the Gaza genocide and to stay on the right side of history, because the number one threat to queer people in the Middle East right now is the genocide being committed by the Israeli government. Israel is not acting in the name of queer and trans people, but they continue to claim that. And when a genocide is being committed in our name as Jews and our name as queer and trans people, I think it's all the more important that queer and trans organizations and Jewish organizations speak up. I think it's also just the right thing to do is to speak up against genocide.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
The name of a man that Brandy loved. summer's day, bringing gifts from far away. But it made it clear it couldn't stay. No harbor was his home. The sailor said, "Bravely, you're a fine girl. What a good wife you would be.
Such a fine girl.
But my life, my love, and my lady is the sea."
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. Finally, we have some football to talk about. We had preseason football, a lot of big narratives, which we talked about on last week's show. We've finally got some football to talk about. So we'll get into that, week one of the NFL preseason. We'll talk about Shedeur Sanders' debut, Cam Ward, the number one pick in the draft's debut, Trevion Henderson becoming a household name after his fantastic game with New England, not to mention some big storylines in Minnesota surrounding J.J. McCarthy. So we'll get into all of that. The AP poll just dropped for college football, the preseason rankings, and this is where they'll be ranked once week one, or I guess week zero, kicks off in a few weeks' time. Cannot wait for that. So we will look at the rankings. Big, big, big win yesterday by the Toronto Blue Jays, avoiding the sweep against the LA Dodgers. They tried to give that game away in the later part with Hoffman on the mound walking pretty much every batter that came up for the Dodgers. But the Blue Jays, a huge homer in the ninth inning. And then finally, they got a big closing outing by Flaherty, who's been pitching pretty well. Hoffman's usually been okay. It was rough in the eighth inning, walked a bunch of batters, and he was even worse in the ninth. And it got so bad, if you didn't watch it, the bases were loaded with one out. Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts coming up to the plate. And Flaherty got out of that one for the Blue Jays. So Toronto with a much-needed win. They did not want to get swept by the Dodgers. They still hold a four-game lead in the American League East. But this has been a rough stretch for them, let's be honest. Sure, they played Colorado in there, and they played Baltimore, who really took it to them. But they had the Dodgers this weekend. They have the Cubs now starting tomorrow at home. Then it's Texas. They believe they have a series with the Brewers coming up as well. So this is a tough part of the schedule. And if Toronto can just play, you know, 500 baseball the rest of the way, maybe a bit above that, they're in the postseason for sure. It's pretty much clinched now. But they got teams like Boston behind them in their division. The Yankees, I don't know what's going on there. That's a discussion for another day with the New York Yankees. They're 3-7 in their last 10, and the Aaron Boone out chance are starting to pick up. They lost another series over the weekend, so it's really, really a dark place for the New York Yankees. It started a few weeks back when they got swept four games by the Blue Jays. Then I remember they had that awful, awful, awful series with the Cubs before the All-Star break. Then they went and played Toronto again, and they lost that series. Then they played a series with the Phillies. They lose that series two games out of three. And then it just really picked up after the Marlins series. To get swept by the Miami Marlins, really? The Miami Marlins? And to lose like they did in that 13-12 game where Devin Williams, I don't know what the hell's happening with him, one of the great closers in all of baseball last few years, comes to the Yankees, and he's been a liability. Let's be honest. Every time he goes up on the mound after the eighth inning, he costs the Yankees the game. So the Yankees are really struggling after a great start to the year. Remember, they lost Soto, but they brought in Bellinger, they brought in Goldschmidt, they brought in Max Fried, they brought in all these players to contribute for the Yankees. And Max Fried's had a good year. Bellinger's had a decent year. But Aaron Judge's had a good year, but the last month and a half has just been an outright disaster. And went from torpedo bats and hitting a million home runs against Milwaukee the first weekend of the year, Yankees fans saying they're back, to us being here on August the 11th and them being third in the American League East. That awful series with the Marlins, then they lost the series after that to the Texas Rangers, and then at home against the Astros, they took the game on Saturday, but they lost 5-3 on Friday, another blown game there, and then just had nothing yesterday against the Astros, losing 7-1. So the Yankees are in a very strange position. They're 6.5 back of Toronto. They're 2.5 back of the Red Sox for second, and they're clinging on to their playoff hopes right now. Which, in a brutal American League, that's a big blow to the Yankees. They just thought they had to show up. The way this league has played this year is shocking. The Blue Jays are by far the best team. Let's be honest. The Astros, they're hit or miss. The Tigers have been woeful since the All-Star break. Maybe a bit before that. With Cleveland, Boston's a bunch of young kids and Trevor Story. They traded Devers away. Like, okay, the Yankees stink. Who's good in the American League? There's no dominant team, but the Blue Jays have been the best, without question. Anyway, if you told me the Red Sox go to the World Series or the Blue Jays go to the World Series, I would not be surprised at all. It's been woeful the second half of the year. Woeful. And you go to the National League, and it's the Dodgers, it's the Padres, it's the Cubs, it's the best team in baseball, the Brewers, it's the Phillies, it's the Mets. The National League have much better top-end teams, but only one team can represent the National League in the World Series. So who knows? Maybe Chicago and Milwaukee and the Dodgers and the Padres and the Mets and the Phillies, they just go at it over a month and a half span. And once they get to a World Series against a Boston or against a Toronto or against a Detroit, they'll be gassed. Who knows? But to say the American League's on the same level as the National League right now would be false. That is not true. There's no world where anyone will say the American League is as good as the National League right now. Now, you do have your awful teams in the National League. I'm not saying that. Pittsburgh, Washington, Colorado. There's some bad teams in the National League. I'm not saying that. Even the Braves have been shocking this year. But overall, the top end, you have at least 6 to 7 very good teams in the National League, where I can argue maybe 3 in the American League. Maybe. Maybe. Cleveland's playing a bit better. The Mariners are playing better. So maybe you have 4. I put Toronto, Houston, Seattle, Detroit. And then there's like a second tier with Boston, New York, Tampa. Even Tampa's been a stretch. They've been awful recently. To me, Toronto, Seattle, Houston, Detroit, Boston are your 5 best in the American League. And then you go to the National League, and I can't even, who's it? The Dodgers? Is it the Padres? Is it the Brewers, who are 73-44 and have won 9 in a row? Is it the Cubs, who are playing close to .600 baseball? How about the Phillies and the Mets? I know the Mets are losing like crazy right now, but they're still well over .500. The Mets thing's interesting. Losing 7 in a row at this point of the year, it was a challenge between them and the Phillies. But now it's getting closer, but I still believe the Mets at the end of the day are going to be, at worst, the last wildcard team. At worst. I'm not buying Cincinnati, not buying St. Louis. The Giants have been shocking since Devers has showed up. So to me, the Mets are going to be fine. I know people are overreacting. They've lost 7 in a row, 1-9 in their last 10. They don't have elite starting pitching by any means, but they got good bats. Soto's got a clutch hitter. Lindor, Alonso, the list goes on. And they did get some great arms for their bullpen, which I think will pay off come October. So the Mets are struggling right now, but I still count them as one of the best teams in the National League. But you look at that top 4, or 5, Brewers, Phillies, Dodgers, Cubs, Padres, and if you want to include the Mets, those are 6 very good teams compared to maybe, I'm saying maybe 4. Maybe. And who knows, the Guardians have won 8 out of their last 10. Who knows? And I'm a Red Sox fan. To me, if you tell me the Red Sox are on the same level as the Dodgers and the Padres, who they lost 2-3 over the weekend, you're lying. Toronto, Houston, Seattle, Detroit, those are your four best. And maybe Boston fifth. That's where we stand in the American League. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because the National League plays the National League in the playoffs. The American League plays the American League in the playoffs. So who cares? But if you're a Toronto and you're this close and you have Shane Bieber, who pitched pretty well in AAA or was a AA over the weekend, if they can add him to the starting rotation, Toronto's in a very good position. Scherzer and can be more on a pitch count. Lauer's pitched fantastic. You still have Gausman. You still have Bassett. You still have Berrios. And you add Bieber to that mix. That's a very good starting rotation. Probably the best in the American League. And that would give Toronto a whole bunch of energy going to the playoffs. Because as great as Vladdy Guerrero Jr. can be, and as great as Bo Bichette can be, and as great as George Springer has been in past postseasons, it comes down to pitching. So if the Blue Jays can get Shane Bieber anywhere close to a Cy Young winning self a few years ago, then they got a hell of a pitcher at the deadline, and that really becomes a fantastic starting rotation. Berrios, Bieber, Gausman, Bassett, and then you have Lauer and Scherzer. Maybe one goes to the bullpen, the bolster the bullpen. Everything kind of works from there. But if Bieber is close to what he was a few years ago after this surgery, he's still young, he's in his early 30s, still got a few years left of him pitching at a high level, then Toronto, in my opinion, will have the best starting rotation in baseball. In the American League, sorry. I know Skubal is there in Detroit, and there's Houston's got some good pitchers. Okay, fair enough. But to me, Toronto's in good shape if they have that pitching lineup going into a series come October in the American League. So that's our quick little baseball rundown to start the show. I know I wanted to do football first, but I got into the baseball standings. But you know what? I don't even think we did baseball last week. We had so much to talk about. So we had to get baseball done at the top of the show today. So college football, we'll quickly do that first, and then we'll spend the rest of the hour talking about the NFL. Released their top 25, the AP poll, the Associated Press top 25. And by maybe one of the narrowest margins ever in voting, the Texas Longhorns were voted the number one team in the country. And it's not surprising that they're number one. Arch Manning, all the hype, all the expectations. Steve Sarkisian, one of the great offensive minds in all of college football. That defense is legit, one of the 3 to 5 best in all college football. What's not to like about the Texas Longhorns? I totally expected them to be the number one team in the country coming into the year, and they are. Number two, which was almost the number one team in the country, and we talked a bit about them last week, a program that hasn't won a big game in I don't know how long, is Penn State. They're ranked number two in the country, and we know why. Because the quarterback's coming back, the two running backs are coming back, they have a loaded roster, one of the great offensive lines in the country, but they still have James Franklin as their head coach. And I like James Franklin. To me, he's an upper-class head coach in college football. To me, he's anywhere from 10 to 7. But name me, if you're a college football fan, a big game in which James Franklin's won. Name me a game. They lost every big game they played this year. Let's be honest. Don't give me SMU at home in the first round of the playoff. Then the next round, like I mentioned last week, they got Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl. Not Georgia. Not Oregon. Boise State. And then they played Notre Dame, who, well, let's be honest, I like Riley Leonard, limited passer, and y'all know what they're going to do. They're going to run the ball and play defense, and they lose that game. So the one time they played an equal opponent, they lost. They lost the Big Ten title game to Oregon. And then at home, against Ohio State, they lost. When do they win a big game? I don't know when Penn State wins a big game. And I understand that the roster's probably the best in college football along with Texas. But still, until Penn State wins a big game, I can't say they're the second best team in the country. And I understand Ohio State, new quarterback. They lost Judkins, the running back, and Henderson in the NFL. They lost Sawyer, Will Howard. But they still have Jeremiah Smith there, who's the best player in college football, the wide receiver. And you got to remember, Ohio State is the Alabama, the Georgia of the North. That's what Ohio State is. Every year, they have the top recruiting class. And if they don't have the number one recruiting class, well, they have number two. And when has Penn State, in the last 10 years, beaten Ohio State in a big game? They haven't. Was it 2017, 2018, maybe, in a whiteout they beat them? Maybe. But recently, when they didn't, with Saquon Barkley, they went into, as the higher-ranked team, went to Ohio State and lost. Last year, at home against Ohio State, lost. Year before that, lost. Year before that, lost. When does Penn State beat Ohio State? When does Penn State beat Michigan when Michigan has a pulse? 2 years ago, J.J. McCarthy didn't even throw against Penn State in the second half, and they won. I'm sorry, Penn State, they're very talented, and I have to hear how Drew Aller is the next great NFL quarterback. Okay, fair enough. That can be true. But as we sit here in August of 2025, Penn State has not proven they can win a big game. They find ways to lose big games. That Notre Dame game in the semifinal, they had the ball in a tie game, a minute left, timeouts with their future star quarterback in the NFL, Drew Aller. And what did he do? He threw a pick. Basically in field goal range. Notre Dame moves the ball up 10 yards and they win the game. That's what happens. What happened against Oregon? We all remember the goal line stand against Ohio State this year. They couldn't get that yard. They couldn't do it. Penn State can't win a big game. And here they are, they're ranked number two in the country. And if you want to go by talent, fair enough. They might be the second most talented team in the country. But until James Franklin in a big spot wins a big game, I can't put them as the second best team in the country. How are they ahead of Ohio State? They never beat Ohio State. And Ohio State just won the national championship. I know, new team, new roster, fair, I don't care. Ohio State should be number two. Just out of respect, they have to be number two. Do I think they're better than Clemson? I don't know. Think they're better than Georgia? I haven't seen Gunnar Stockton play outside of that game, outside of the second half in the NCAA Championship game and that Notre Dame game, so I don't know. But fair enough. Okay, you want to put Penn State 2 in the country? Fair enough. But would any of you guys be shocked when Penn State loses a big game this year? No one would be shocked. That's what they do. The roster's great. The quarterback's great. They got the two running backs. Amazing defense. Fair enough. But James Franklin can't win a big game right now. And when he does, people are going to come back, oh, Tom, remember he said he can't win a big game? I didn't say he can. I'm just saying he hasn't. And he's had plenty of opportunities. He's been there a long time at Penn State. And he did a great job of recruiting. He turned the program around. Fair enough. But he cannot. And he has proven he cannot win a big game. How many more times am I going to give him a chance to win a big game? He plays Ohio State every year. He plays Michigan every year. And they can't get over the line. He was in the Big Ten Championship game last year, lost. Okay, they beat up on little SMU. Beat up on Boise State. And then they play a Notre Dame team, which everyone slept on, that lost to Northern Illinois. And lost. 50-50 game, but they lost. So here they are. Oh, Penn State right now is ranked number two. Based on the roster, okay. Then Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, Notre Dame, Oregon 7, Alabama 8, and number 9 is LSU, 10's Miami. And I've heard nothing but people loving LSU this year. Loving LSU. And it's the same thing every year. Any team that has a great quarterback or a quarterback who Mel Kiper and Joel Klatt and all these guys have going in the top five of the draft, people love preseason. So that quarterback's Garrett Nussmeier, and he's projected to go number one, maybe number two if Arch Manning decides to come out after this year. But he's slated to be the top guy. And listen, they got great receivers. They've lost some offensive linemen to the NFL. The big one being Will Campbell, their star left tackle, went to New England. They're going to have to replace him. The defense was concerning at points last year, especially that South Carolina game. That Alabama, what was the other game? They just got absolutely destroyed. It was a Texas A&M. There was a few games where LSU's defense just didn't know what the hell they were doing. So that's going to be interesting. And this is a huge year for Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly doesn't win the first game of the year ever. They lose to Florida State. They lose to USC. They play all these big games early in the year, and they lose. And it's just they never get off to a good start. And at the end of the year, it's like, oh, look at LSU. They're 9-3. Oh, LSU's 8-4. They actually turn things around later. They're like the Bengals, literally the Bengals of college football. Great, horrible start to the year, and then they turn around late. This year, they have to get off to a good start. You get Clemson the first week, then Florida, Ole Miss, South Carolina. They cannot have a bad start to the year. The schedule opens up a little bit at the end of the year. Vanderbilt, Western Kentucky, Arkansas. They do have the big games at Alabama and Oklahoma, A&M, but that's the SEC. You're not going to have an easy schedule for the SEC. But if you look at schedules in the SEC go, that's one of the easier ones. It's not a Florida schedule. It's not an Oklahoma schedule. Oklahoma schedule is brutal. It's not like that. But it's a fairly easy schedule. They do have Clemson week one. And if they can win that game, then I think the sky's the limit for LSU this year. But Brian Kelly doesn't win the first game of the year. They lost to Lincoln Riley's USC last year. To Miller Moss. Is it Miller Moss? And now Miller Moss is the quarterback at Louisville. That's who Brian Kelly lost to his first game of the year last year. 2 years ago, they got their doors blown off against Florida State with Jaden Daniels as his quarterback. The year before that, they lost, I think, to Florida State. They never win the first game of the year. Labor Day weekend, and they don't show up. So this is a huge year for Brian Kelly at LSU. Got that massive contract. And LSU, they expect results. And there's no excuses this year. They have the quarterback. They have the talent around Nussmeier. They have to make a run at the SEC title this year. They do. I mentioned Miami's 10 with Carson Beck now replacing Cam Ward at Miami. That should be interesting. Arizona State, 11. Illinois, 12. South Carolina, 13. Michigan, 14. Florida, 15. Other notable names later on. I'll just give you the whole top 25. Who cares? So I said Michigan 14, Florida 15, SMU 16, Kansas State 17, Oklahoma 18, Texas A&M 19, Indiana 20, Ole Miss 21, Iowa State 22, Texas Tech 23, Tennessee 24, Boise State 25. So there you have it. That's the top 25. Some noticeable teams not in there. USC not in there. Michigan State. There's a lot of noticeable programs missing. So there you have it. That's a quick little rundown. And my rant against Penn State. That was, and I don't hate Penn State. I don't hate the Nittany Lions at all. I don't. And I want to see what this team can do. But in a big spot, to say that they're a great program is nuts. They have the talent. They have the players. Can they win a big game against an equal opponent? And they haven't shown it. They haven't shown it. That's just the facts. So, yeah, Texas. Let's see. Texas is going to be good. Since Sarkisian's got there, they've recruited well. They have amazing NIL backing. I understand that. So Texas, number one team in the country, and let's see what Arch Manning can do. And what a way to start the year with them heading to Ohio State to start the year. Man, what a game. A rematch of that classic semifinal game last year. Quick little breakdown of news before we go to our first break. Justin Rose, he won the first FedEx Cup playoff event in a playoff against J.J. Spahn. They've been in a lot of playoffs this year, J.J. Spahn and Justin Rose. Rosie, obviously, at the Masters. J.J. Spahn at the Players. Both of them lost to Rory in playoffs. But what a year for J.J. Spahn. He only has one win, and it is the U.S. Open, so that's the one to get. But playoff loss at the Players, playoff loss at a FedEx Cup event. What a year for J.J. Spahn, who what, 14, 15 months ago, didn't know if he would have his tour card, and is now firmly on the Ryder Cup team. I think they said he's second in Ryder Cup points now behind Scheffler for the U.S., and now he's one of the top 10 players in the world. So great turnout for him. Feel bad for Tommy Fleetwood. He crumbled again down the stretch. So he's looking for his first win, but what a win for Justin Rose. Big win for him. I just got a report here now. The UFC moving to Paramount Plus and a 7-year, $7.7 billion U.S. rights deal. So under the deal, Paramount will exclusively distribute the UFC's full lineup of its 13 marquee number events and 30 fight nights on its streaming platform, Paramount Plus, with select numbered events also set to simulcast on CBS starting in 2026. So they're basically admitting pay-per-view's dead. Pay-per-view's done. The Canelo Crawford fights on Netflix, now UFC moving to Paramount Plus for streaming, it's dead. And it's not surprising because they, with all these illegal streams out right now, what, people are going to pay $70 for a pay-per-view, maybe even more, $90 Canadian for a pay-per-view? It's not going to happen. I'm just going to legally stream it. Or get one of those Fire Sticks and I'll watch it that way. Paramount Plus, a lot of people have that already. Maybe bring some customers, you just pay your monthly fee and you get to watch the UFC. Smart move by the UFC because they have pay-per-view numbers, we're in the tubes. Streaming was crazy. So now just signed a deal with a streaming company. There you go. So that's the big breaking news that just happened now. Literally like 20 minutes ago. So there you have it. The UFC new streaming deal with Paramount Plus. We're going to take our first break. And when we come back, we have to talk about some of that preseason football. Man, did we have some storylines. Shedeur Sanders played well. Cam Ward showed some flashes. Travion Henderson and J.J. McCarthy finally got some action post his bad knee injury from last year. So we will get into that here on the Tommy John Show. We'll be back right after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Offer a theatrical program made up of local films and international new releases, classics and little-known nuggets, as well as short films and family screenings. Our tickets are among the cheapest in Montreal, $10 for a regular entry or $8 for students, children, and seniors. We also offer 6-ticket movie cards for even more savings. Come see us at Casa d'Italia, just across from John Talon Metro, and visit cinemapublic.ca to discover our programming. Le Cinéma Public for a lively cinema.
Tune in to Fukubukuro on Saturdays at 8 p.m. for your weekly grab bag of music from Japan, East Asia, and everywhere else. Only on CJLO 1690 AM.
Here on the Tommy John Show. So yeah, big news in the NFL because preseason's here. And we got storylines. And it's usually with the crappier teams, like I said last week. I mean, no one cares what the Chiefs do in the preseason. No one cares that Josh Allen plays for Buffalo in the preseason. No one cares. All right. Oh, Joe Burrow played great against the Eagles. Okay, he should. The Eagles aren't putting their starters out there. And Ja'Marr Chase is playing. T. Higgins is playing. Okay, he's going to put up good numbers. Joe Burrow's great. We already know that. And another thing with the Bengals, I'm for them playing in the preseason, because if they get off to another one of these slow starts, Zach Taylor is going to be called into the owner's office and he's going to have some explaining to do. Because how many times are they going to start the year that horribly? It's unbelievable. Every damn year with the Bengals. They lost to the Patriots last year, week one. Gerard Mayo's coaching debut. And now we don't even know where Gerard Mayo is anymore. Well, I mean, it's probably a crazy buyout he got. He's just living it up, and God bless him. But that Patriots team was horrendous, and the Bengals look putrid week one there, and they just never get off the good starts. Ever. So I'm for them playing in the preseason in the worst way. The worst way. So now we have the storylines from the bad teams. So the Browns, the Patriots, the Titans, the Panthers. You pick a bad team. The Giants. Just awful, awful football team. The Jets. Teams like that. The preseason gets a lot of attention in those markets. The Steelers, no one cares. Chiefs, no one cares. Eagles, literally no one cares. Commanders, who cares? Patriots fans are like, oh, we have to see if Drake May can play. Oh, we have to see if the offensive line plays well. Oh, we have to see if Milton Williams is worth $100 million. It's one preseason game. Guys, relax. The Browns. Oh, my God. Is Shadur going to start? Titans. How does Cam Ward look? Oh, Giants fans. Jackson Dart. The Saints. Oh, my God. Is Tyler Shaik the next Drew Brees? That's the same nonsense. And I'm for the preseason. I like people playing in the preseason. So once you hit week one, you're ready to go. There's no ironing out anything. You're just ready to play. You've gotten the rust off. And week one, you're hitting the ground running. So I'm for people playing in the preseason. And Andy Reid does it with Mahomes. He played a series on Saturday against Arizona. Like, they do it. So I'm for them playing. But do I care what the results are? No, I don't. C.J. Stroud was terrible in the preseason, and then he turned out one of the great rookie years of all time. So it's just for quarterbacks and offensive linemen, and I think it's valuable for the defense, too, to actually feel some contact, make some tackles. That's where I think it's even more important. But if you look at it from a quarterback perspective, it's just getting used to your receivers, getting used to getting hit a little bit, because in practice they don't get touched. That's what it's for. That's what it's really for. So the big storyline, and we'll get to Cam Ward later, and we'll get to J.J. McCarthy later, and we'll get to Jackson Dart later. I hate to do it and follow the narratives that ESPN and Fox and what they talk about all the time, and Shedeur Sanders, but we'll have to start there just because it's such a big story. So we all know he fell in the draft, apparently the worst draft interviews you've ever heard. He was just being cocky, arrogant. And he falls in the draft. Should have been a first-round draft pick. At worst, start of the second. But everyone going in the draft night thought he's either going to be picked 6th overall or he'll drop to 20, and then that'll be it. No one thought he would fall the 5th round. The 5th round to the Browns. And Dillon Gabriel's hurt. The quarterback they took ahead of Shedeur Sanders. He gets hurt. Kenny Pickett's not feeling great. Joe Flacco's ancient. Why is he going to play in the preseason? Deshaun Watson's not playing at all this year. So as a result, Shedeur Sanders gets to play in the preseason. And what Shedeur Sanders do, he looked pretty darn good. He was accurate. He avoided getting hit. He bought time. He rolled out of the pocket. He showed his accuracy, man. Oof! In the red zone, those were some darts he threw in there. And he looked pretty darn good. And now everyone's coming out saying, oh my God, Shedeur Sanders. And he's playing with a bit of an edge. And I kind of like it. I'm being honest. I mean, he should have an edge. plate ticked off. Everyone, no one say people wrote him off, but no one wanted to deal with Shador's BS. And he went out there, albeit against the Carolina Panthers, and he threw for, what, 140 yards. He had two touchdowns. Was very efficient. He only missed one or two throws. I'd say, ooh, that wasn't his best. But outside of that, he had some drops. Some pressure was bad. He had to throw the ball away. But all in all, I thought Shador Sanders played very, very well. And I think his game will translate to the next level. Now, like I said on Instagram following the game, you can follow us at the Tommy John Show on Instagram. Is he going to be a Joe Burrow level, Josh Allen level, a Patrick Mahomes level? No, I don't. He's not the most physically gifted player. He's not slow, but he's not fast either, which is strange considering Deion Sanders, his father, one of the great athletes of all time. But he's extremely accurate, gets the ball out quick, knows what the smart play is, doesn't turn the ball over. That will get you a pretty far way in the NFL. And once he gets confidence, once he starts to understand the system, I think he'd be pretty productive. He's much better than where he was drafted. That was all just because of his personality. No one wanted distractions. And also, he's quite full of himself. Let's be honest. All of this to say, my quick Shador Sanders take before we get into the other teams, because everyone's talking about Shador Sanders, is that he's going to be okay. And he went to a good spot, let's be honest. I know people like to take shots at the Browns, and rightfully so. They've done nothing. But they have a good defense. And Kevin Stefanski's still one of the great coaches in football. He is. He's won two coaches of the year. He made Joe Flacco look pretty darn good 2 years ago. So I'm not concerned about Shador Sanders getting bad coaching, not being in a good spot to succeed. I think he'll actually do pretty well there. And he's also bringing something the Browns have never had, which is swag, aura, some cockiness. The Browns is always kind of like, oh my God, it's the Browns. The woeful, woeful Cleveland Browns. Shador Sanders at least gives them some energy. The Cleveland Browns, for the first time since Johnny Manziel, really, and nothing against that situation, but it was a disaster. But he brought attention and spotlight to the Cleveland Browns. For the wrong reasons, but he brought attention and publicity to the Browns, which they have not had since. Maybe a little bit with Baker Mayfield, but nothing like this. Shador Sanders, all the hype, everyone was tuning in on Friday night at Carolina in early August. People were tuning in because they wanted to see, can Shador play, and is he going to play ticked off? Now let's see what he does. Does he feel himself now? Is he back to his cocky ways after a performance like this? He feels like he's silent to doubters. He hasn't done anything. So if Shador plays well and keeps playing like this in the preseason, there is a chance he might start week one for the Browns. And I honestly believe it's going to be Joe Flacco, just because they know who Joe Flacco is. He led them to the playoffs a few years ago. But if Shador plays like this the rest of the preseason, he's going to get a chance this year to play games. He is. Here's Shador Sanders following the Browns' win 30-10 over the Panthers for the first preseason game, and after he played the first half and had 140 yards and two touchdown passes.
Overall, I'm thankful. I'm thankful for the opportunity first. I'm thankful for being able to look in all those and every player that was out there participating eyes and like tell them like this new, this a family. You know, we gotta change. You gotta know. So me coming here, you know, my vow is to definitely make change, and change was made. I was very thankful, very excited being out there with the O-line and everything like that. Like I was so thankful being out there with them receivers. Everybody did their part, and I feel like everybody believed.
What do you think changed tonight?
I would say just the energy around. I would say. Well, since I've been around, you know, the energy around like the Browns, you know, I just feel like overall, it was a different spark. You know, I feel like it was a spark, even though it's a preseason game. Typically, people don't take those too much serious, but like that's our Super Bowl. You know, that's each and every player's Super Bowl. So the change is a family thing. You know, it's a family. You got to be able to go to war with each and every guy and understand like. We're not playing for ourselves here. We're playing for each other, you know. So not making selfish mistakes, not doing that type of stuff, getting through reads, handing the ball off, doing what you got to do. Everybody do their job, and that's how we believe in one another.
So that was Shedeur Sanders following an impressive rookie debut, albeit, don't laugh, it's the preseason, but like you said, for him, a fifth-round draft pick, and the other people he was playing with, it is their Super Bowl. They're trying to make this team. They're trying to put a good impression for the Cleveland Browns. And he did say, you know, we're the feeling around the Browns, you know, it's shifting, it's changing. And that's what I said. He brings aura. He brings swagger, something the Browns have never had, ever. Think about it. When's it like maybe Baker for an hour? Johnny Manziel played like four games. Shedeur Sanders is right. He's a much better pro quarterback than Johnny Manziel. Like Johnny Manziel, Heisman Trophy winner, incredible in college. All right, understand it. He brought swag, but no one was talking about Johnny Manziel like Shedeur. I know he went in the first round, but people are like, oh, he's small. He's not accurate. He runs around. If he gets hit, oh boy. That was never the case with Shedeur Sanders. People knew Shedeur was accurate, big arm, bigger guy, could probably translate better than the NFL. But just his personality got in the way. But very impressive for Shedeur, and I cannot wait for their next preseason game, which is coming up, actually, this weekend, Saturday at Philadelphia. So we'll see Shedeur Sanders again. Maybe he'll make another impression, 1 p.m. on Saturday. The other quarterback that led the headlines this year was Cam Ward, obviously the number one pick in the draft. And Cam Ward showed off his talent. He made some good plays. There were still some rocky portions early on in his game against Tampa Bay. That's to be expected. He's a young rookie. But overall, I thought he played pretty well. He's got a big arm. Very big arm. He was efficient. And it was a good first game for Cam Ward. It was. And listen, to Tennessee, their goals this year is to see if he can play and make sure he doesn't get hurt. That's pretty much like nothing against the Titans, but I don't know anyone who would have the Titans in a wild card race right now or trying to make the postseason. That doesn't seem right at all. But I thought he was impressive. He showed off his arm strength. He can really push the ball down the field. That's the one thing he can do. Like that throw to Calvin Ridley over the middle of the field, that was a great throw. So I liked what I saw from Cam Ward in his first preseason game. He must be playing another one. I doubt that they'll sit him the rest of the way. He's going to get one series in or two, whoever he played, three series in before week one. To me, he'll probably play again next week, and then we'll go from there. But his next start is Friday at Atlanta. So let's see what happens with Cam Ward. But see, he was pretty good. I liked what I saw from Cam Ward. Jackson Dart was surprising, too. And I went at Jackson Dart. I went at the Giants for not taking Shedeur Sanders. And they took Jackson Dart. And listen, I was a bit harsh on Jackson Dart. He's a good quarterback. But I had people saying he's going to be the next Josh Allen. Let's just take a break, all right? Let's see what happens with him first. I just thought he was bad in big spots for Ole Miss. To me, last year, Ole Miss, with that coaching staff and that roster, to not make the college football playoff was a travesty. There's 12 teams that went last year. SMU got in. Indiana got in. How the hell Ole Miss wasn't one of those teams? I don't know. Oh, I know, because they lost to Kentucky. They just lost these games. They had no business losing. And Jackson Dart was a big reason why. And yes, he's talented, and he has a big arm, I understand it, and he went to a good spot because Brian Daboll's one of the best QB coaches in all of football. Look what he did with Daniel Jones, got him a big contract. Look what he did for Josh Allen's development as the OC in Buffalo. Now he's got his guy with Jackson Dart, and clearly he's doing good work with him. He played very well, albeit against the Bills' backups, but he played very well in his first preseason game on, was it Sunday? Sunday. So Jackson Dart played well. The one that I'm a bit iffy on is Tyler Shaik. Listen, I know he had the big touchdown, but that guy was open by a bunch of yards. That pick six was terrible. New Orleans is not a good football team. Let's just cut to the chase. They're in an awkward spot. They have no cap space. They can't do anything. They're an older team. Now they're just recycling these young quarterbacks, Spencer Rattler, the second-round pick Tyler Shaukh, who's 100 years old. It's the oldest rookie I've ever seen. What is he, 26? I think he did a podcast with Amon-Ra St. Brown. And Amon-Ra St. Brown, he's already on his second NFL contract, is younger than him. I don't even know how that's possible. So that's how old Tyler Shaukh is. And nothing wrong with that. Joe Burrow was an older rookie, but not that old. He wasn't 26. I think Brandon Whedon maybe was an older rookie when he went to the Browns. You don't really see 27. Stetson Bennett's pretty old. He was in college for a long time. That quarterback from Utah, I don't even know if he's in the NFL. He might have retired. He was at Utah for 30 years. It was a Cam Rising, I think his name was, with the mullet. He was at Utah for 100 years. So there's quarterbacks that spend a bunch of time in college, but rarely get drafted in the first three rounds of the draft. And that's what happened to Tyler Shaukh, the 100-year-old veteran. 100 years old. Veteran, Tommy? Veteran? No, rookie. Sorry, I misspoke. 100-year-old rookie. Rookie. Almost 30. I think he's 26, 27. As a rookie, that's insane. Drake May just turned 22. He's going to be 23. This guy's 26. I mean, there's a big difference. And listen, he's got a good arm. He's fine, this Tyler Shaukh kid. I like Kellen Moore as a play caller, but let's see. I'm not sold on what I saw. Despite him throwing a 50-yard touchdown, fair enough. But that was just pure the receiver blew past the corner and the safety and was gone. And he put it on him. Fair enough. He put it on the money. But then after that, I was not incredibly impressed. Maybe that's just me. But I was far more impressed with Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward for the brief time we saw him, and Jackson Dart. The Dart one surprised me because I heard reports he was struggling in camp, throwing some picks. He looked pretty good over the weekend for the Giants. So those were the new quarterbacks that we got to see. The big storyline, though, out of it, right before we go to break, is J.J. McCarthy. Because we haven't seen J.J. McCarthy in a year since a preseason game last year, which he played very well. And I was a J.J. McCarthy critic, I would say. I liked him on Michigan, but let's be honest. They had two great running backs. They had one of the great defenses in all of college football, and they just used Edwards and Blake Corum, ran the ball behind that great offensive line and won a national championship. Not saying J.J. McCarthy didn't have big moments. He had that big drive in the Rose Bowl against Alabama to win that game. He's been good for the Wolverines. And he showed flashes last year, and he's in a great spot to succeed. Name me five teams that have better rosters than the Vikings. I don't think you can. When Jordan Addison's your second wide receiver, you're a good football team. Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, I love the offensive line. They get the Darrishaw kid back. They're going to have one of the better offensive lines. Their defense and their Brian Flores is nasty. And they have the best play caller and best quarterback whisperer, maybe in football, outside of Sean McVay in Kevin O'Connell. So J.J. McCarthy, honestly, he was very smart with the ball, didn't turn it over, was taking it easy. But he led all the storylines. Again, I don't know why it's such a fascinating story. It's not like Sam Darnold's a household name. I mean, he was a third overall pick in the draft and was great at USC. But people are so caught up in this they didn't bring back Sam Darnold thing. Listen, they didn't bring back Sam Darnold because the Seahawks offered him $130 million. That's why he didn't come back to Minnesota. They wanted him back, and then they saw Seattle's offer. Like, Jesus, we ain't paying that. And they were going to give up all that money for Daniel Jones? Why would they do that? We picked this kid last year in the top 10 of the draft. Let's see he can play. And I get it. The team has Super Bowl aspirations with that roster, one of the five to ten best defenses in football, and just an unbelievable roster, amazing running backs, great offensive line, all-world tight end, best receiver in football, best number two receiver in football, best play caller. Okay, we get it. The Vikings are ready to roll. We just don't know about the quarterback, and he's already injured without even playing an NFL regular season game. Plus, there are the question marks in college and all that stuff. Ugh, it's a strange thing. Here is J.J. McCarthy talking about it. He always says the right things. I will give J.J. McCarthy that. He's very good with the media, says the right thing, loves to give his teammates props. He's a great teammate and a great leader. And I honestly, I'm rooting for the kid. As much as I hate Michigan, I'm not a Michigan Wolverines guy, and I was very skeptical of J.J. McCarthy. People were putting him in the Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, Drake May tier. I'm like, let's pump the brakes. But he went to the best location, best coach, best surrounding cast you could ask for a rookie. And unfortunately, he got hurt. But he spent the full year, despite being injured and losing weight and all that stuff, in that room, learning from Kevin O'Connell, learning from Sam Darnold, and I think he'll play pretty well. A lot of people don't like the Vikings this year. I'm buying stock on the Minnesota Vikings. I am. Here was J.J. McCarthy after playing football again after a year after being injured.
To see you all as always, just want to say, you know, it felt amazing to be back out there, you know, just really playing football again and being out there with the guys. There's really nothing like it. I love the way we played as a group, collectively. You know, the defense was outstanding. The kicking game was outstanding. You know, Khalif and Ambry getting those three picks, it was absolutely amazing. And, you know, with the one drive that I had, you know, it was great to kind of get things done from an operational standpoint, but there's a lot that we could build off that, a lot more areas we could grow, and, you know, with me specifically for sure. But, you know, happy to string together, you know, a 12-play drive and, you know, put some points on the board. Just want to say, you know, send your thoughts and prayers out to Rondell and Zeke. It's just extremely unfortunate, the situations they went through today. Nobody wants to see that. And, yeah, they need all the help they can get, so.
I'll be back out there just, I mean, after a year to be kind of get back into game action. What was it like when you first kind of stepped under center?
Unbelievable. Just, you know, had a little tear drop, not going to lie, you know, being out there right before the national anthem. Just, you know, this game is the best game in the world. And to be out there with this kind of group and this coaching staff, it was absolutely terrific.
So that was J.J. McCarthy. Listen, he's amazing in front of the mics and he's a likable guy. And I've seen him on talk shows. He's a very likable guy. And I'm rooting for him. But every single day on ESPN, on Fox, all these shows is, oh, they're going to take a step back this year. Listen, Sam Darnold, it's not like they lost Tom Brady. It was Sam Darnold, who was bouncing around the league like a hot potato. It was the Jets and the Panthers and the Niners and then the Vikings. Like, Jesus, they're actually like, come on. I like Sam Darnold, but come on now. We're going to quickly take a break. And when we come back, we'll take a look quickly at the Cincinnati Masters, the last tune-up before the U.S. Open. I'm Tommy Lane from the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Do you love hip-hop and R&B? Is your Thursday afternoon lacking groove? I'm DJ Samuel D. Roberts, and I got you covered. Listen to my show, Whip Appeal. I'll be playing hip-hop bangers, R&B slow jams, and everything in between from Canada and around the globe to groove up your Thursday afternoon. Listen to Whip Appeal, Thursdays at 2 p.m. CJLO, 1690 AM.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Blue. Crossover Comics, sharing your passion since 2012.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the year. Back here, we have 1 minute left here on the Tommy John Show. So yeah, Cincinnati Masters. Well, first off, all in all about that J.J. McCarthy thing, he's going to be fine. Kevin O'Connell, great surrounding cast, great defense. It's a tough division and a tough conference, but I think the Vikings will be okay. Big matchup today. Yannick Zimmer and Gabriel Diallo will play at 7 o'clock. We also have to give a shout-out to Victoria Mboko winning the Montreal tennis this year. What a great story for women's tennis in Canada. And right now we can watch Sabalenka in action against Emma Raducanu in the second set. So all the big names are here, apart from Mbuko and Nsaka. They pulled out because they went to the finals in Canada. So I want to thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on CGLO 1690 a.m. We will talk some more football. It's gone, it's
gone. What's up? This is...